The election in November is going to generate whether Trump wins or whether he loses. Let me put it clearly. Whether he wins or whether he loses, buckle up.
Uno, dos, tres.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to In the Thick. This is a podcast about politics, race, and culture from a POC perspective. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Joining us today, all of us in quarantine, separately and going crazy, we have two return all-stars. From Princeton, New Jersey, is Dr. Eddie Claude Jr., James S. McDonald, Distinguished University Professor at Princeton University. Hey, Eddie, welcome back.
Oh, it's my pleasure. This is exciting.
We are so happy to have you. So, so happy. And joining us from Boston, Massachusetts, it's Callie Crossley. She's host of WGBH's Under the Radar. You're on the radar for here. Callie, welcome back.
Oh, I'm so glad to be back.
And we're happy to have you back. So it has been a minute since the both of you have been on the show. It's the first time that you're on the show in 2020, which is honestly like,
wow,
I know. And a lot has happened since you were on the show.
Yeah.
The coronavirus pandemic. I became a survivor of the coronavirus myself. The movement now to defend Black lives, this extraordinary reckoning that's happening all across the country, young people really turning it up. And now the 2020 presidential election officially heating up amidst all of this. It's been intense. So, Callie, start us off. Just what's your temperature check? How you doing? Like, for reals.
I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted physically and emotionally. And as I wrote about recently, I have outrage fatigue and I'm trying to fight it.
Eddie, how you doing?
Oh, I'm holding on. Mm. I'm just barely holding on, actually. It's just I'm exhausted, like Callie, trying to hold on, tired of looking at this damn computer screen and really just trying to figure out a way to step away from this for a moment, you know, because I'm drowning in it. It's been pretty intense.
It's crazy, Julio, for two people who feel exhausted and kind of drowning in it. I mean, we turn to Callie and to Eddie to help us to give context. But I appreciate on this show, Julio, that we do let it all hang out, as we used to say back in the 1970s.
I mean, seriously. But the point being about exhaustion, I think it's important to recognize that. And unfortunately, I feel like this level of exhaustion is going to continue because here we go, 2020 election, and there is now a Zoom meeting called the Democratic National Convention, the DNC, which starts this week.
We the people.
We the people.
We the people.
Nosotros.
We the people of the United States.
We the people call the 48th Quadrennial Democratic National Convention to order.
And it goes through Thursday. All our listeners, we're recording this conversation on a Monday afternoon so that you know. But, you know, the DNC, I actually saw this video. I don't know if you saw it on Twitter. From 1996, it's like the DNC is starting and everyone's doing the Macarena. Like, it was this big joyous event, and
I remember that, actually.
Yeah, so it's going viral on Twitter.
I think that's Clinton's, yeah.
Yeah, Clinton's in 96, so
I saw that.
So anyway, so they're doing the Macarena, and I was like, oh my God, remember these conventions? And, you know, it was supposed to take place in Milwaukee. Obviously, because of the pandemic, it's turned into this entirely virtual format. Talking about computer screens, Eddie, I'm like, oh no. So what we do know is that on Thursday, Joe Biden is scheduled to officially accept the nomination from his home state in Delaware on Thursday. On Monday night, the virtual convention featured speakers from former First Lady Michelle Obama.
Let me be as honest and clear as I possibly can. Donald Trump is the wrong president for our country. He has had more than enough time to prove that he can do the job, but he is clearly in over his head. He cannot meet this moment. He simply cannot be who we need him to be for us. It is what it is.
To Senator Bernie Sanders.
At its most basic, this election is about preserving our democracy. During this president's term, the unthinkable has become normal. He has tried to prevent people from voting, undermined the U.S. Postal Service, deployed the military and federal agents against peaceful protesters, threatened to delay the election and suggested that he will not leave office if he loses. This is not normal, and we must never treat it like it is.
But you all know, and we have people here who are critical of the Democratic Party like we are of the Republican Party. You've already heard the critique, right? That a number of the speakers, like including Sanders and Klobuchar and Buttigieg and Cory Booker, all of them former candidates. So we've heard a lot from these people. And one 2020 candidate was clearly not invited. Guess who that was? Oh, let's see.
The Mexican kid.
One who represents the largest non-white voting bloc, potential voters.
Yeah.
Yes, that would be Latinos and Latinas. And yes, that would be, they did not invite Julian Castro.
Wow.
Who was the only Latino candidate in the primaries. So, I mean, look, there are literally only a handful of Latino or Latina speakers. There are no Muslim speakers scheduled. Meanwhile, you're going to have never Trumper Republicans on stage, including former Ohio Governor John Kasich. So he gets a chance to speak.
Right. And we've talked about this on In the Thick about the importance of the Latino vote. And clearly, I think Joe Biden understands this, considering his first ad with his vice presidential pick. Senator Kamala Harris was partially in Spanish, targeting Latino voters in Arizona and Florida.
Dime con quién andas y te diré quién eres.
That's what our abuelos and abuelas taught us. Now, Joe confirmed he's walking with perfect company. Una aliada and a champion of the Latino community for years. Kamala is the final piece of the puzzle.
Together. But before we dive into this, let's share a clip of what Julian Castro said this Saturday on MSNBC about not being invited to the DNC.
I would be lying to you if I said that I'm not disappointed that there aren't more Latinos and Latinas generally speaking on that program, and that there's not a Native American, not a Muslim American. If you think about the beautiful coalition that has become the Democratic Party over the last few years, I'm not sure right now it's fully represented on that stage. But more important than the speaking, than the talking, is really the doing. And the fact is that we have a ticket in Joe Biden and Kamala Harris that have a strong track record of embracing, of including everybody in this country, no matter what they look like, no matter their background, where they come from. And they've embraced that vision and the policies that they're putting forward. And I know that they're going to be that kind of president and vice president. I think that's more important than, you know, just to speak.
So as we know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, you know, she's going to speak on Tuesday. She gets an entire 60 seconds.
Damn.
Wow. 60 seconds. So, Eddie, let's start with you. I mean, does the DNC even understand its Democratic base?
I think it's nonsense, to be honest with you. Look, there is always this tendency to take for granted those of us who have been critical of the Democratic Party because you can, because there's a general consensus that we need to get Donald Trump out of office. And so the idea that John Kasich would have much more time than AOC makes no sense to me. The idea that Joe Biden would not understand the challenge he faces with regards to Latino voters, given the record that he has been held to account for, right, makes little sense to me. Let me put it this way. I think they're more interested in who they take to be, you know, the golden calf of American politics. They want these disaffected white Republican voters to come over to them, and they assume that they can take for granted the base and those other Democratic voters, because they know that there's a general consensus that we need to get Donald Trump out of office. But it just annoys the hell out of me. And at the same time, we see Ro Khanna and Rashida Tlaib voting no on the DNC platform, right? We have this internal debate. Because of the glare of Trumpism, we can't see the internal fissures within the DNC. And because of the desire and rightfully the demand to get Donald Trump out of office, those ideological fissures have been placed on the back burner, but they're still burning. Let's just be very clear.
So, Callie, we have a great tweet from Brianna Jordan. Joy Gray, who said, how did we go from everyone flexing their high school Spanish on the debate stage to only three Latinos speaking at the DNC? And, you know, I'm in New York City right now, and I cannot believe that freaking Bloomberg is going to be speaking at the convention. But they're only giving AOC, Alexa,
60 seconds.
Oh, my God. It's just that because when I hear the words coming out of my mouth, I'm like, wait a second. I think I said these same words in 1996. I think I said these same words in the year 2000 and 2004 and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, Kelly, okay, let off some steam about your first take on Latinos and Latinas and your general take on the DNC.
Well, first of all, when you were saying the same thing during those years, the documentation was coming, but perhaps the scholarly information wasn't available to folks. It's everywhere. Can somebody read the demographics?
Hello.
I mean, I am shocked by this. Shocked.
Yeah.
This is like basic information now. This is like what I know and all my friends know, and they're not sitting around reading scholarly papers. Everybody knows this. So why would you go against that, even from just an appearance sake? I mean, I don't get that. And then Alexandra, you're going to keep her only on the stage for 60 seconds. She's one of the most popular. Let's take Latina away from it for a second. One of the most popular Democratic politicians, period.
Mm-hmm.
And that's across generations.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing? So what it reminds me of is about this time last year and then the year before, when Democratic Black women were in Tom Perez's face saying, are you kidding me? Mm. Are you really kidding me?
Yeah.
Really? I don't think so. We're the backbone, and we don't see evidence of this party appreciating in real ways, you know, who we are to the party. So that's what it looks like to me. It looks as though the Democratic Party is doing a Tom Perez at a bad time. Mm. This is not the time to do it. Someone wake up.
Mm. Yeah, and I think it's important. There are some Latinos and Latinas who are going to be speaking, but they're not as prominent as a former presidential candidate.
Right.
This is the part that I don't get, right? You're absolutely right, Callie. AOC, incredibly popular as a Democratic politician. But if you want young Latinos and Latinas to get excited in the next 80 days or wherever we at least try to get the high profiles like Julian Castro and AOC to be there. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
But you know what it feels like? I know this is going to be harsh for people of the party.
Ooh.
It almost feels like a punishment.
Oh, for what?
It almost feels like, because we know what happened with Bernie Sanders. Were it not for Latinos and Latinas, Bernie Sanders would not have been in the running.
Oh,
and so it's almost like, by the way, don't believe your hype, which is why we're so hurt right now. Why, you know, my temperature check is I just feel hurt.
I love that you just dropped Public Enemy on all this. This was really nice.
Thank
don't
you.
Believe
I try.
Hype. I like it.
I try. But at the same time, we do know that the squad, Representative Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and more than likely Ayanna Pressley, they will be back in Congress. So they're going to be pushing constantly. In fact, just this past Saturday, Representative Tlaib said that she voted no on the DNC's ballot for the Democratic Party's platform.
Exactly.
Because it did not include a single-payer healthcare system like a Medicare for All, which, you know, kind of seems important in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah.
If there is a Democratic win, and, you know, you cannot win without Latino and Latina voters.
Exactly.
That's all we're saying. You cannot win and win big the way you all want to win without Latino, Latina voters. People are not all just middle of the road white Democrats.
Right. Because if you consider the other side, that's what's happening. You know, it's like in the Republicans. side. I mean, a Republican supporter of the pro-Trump QAnon movement, Marjorie Taylor Greene, she won her House primary election in a deeply red district in Georgia. She'll win, right? And she will go, and she's going to be in Congress talking about QAnon. So you kind of want to, you know, this whole middle thing, I don't know if it's going to work.
You know, I was pretty sure. I thought Biden was going to go call up Amy Klobuchar and say, please be my running mate. That's actually what I thought was going to happen.
Oh,
that's
wow.
How bad I thought that they were going to make it. What's clear is that they did make this choice with Kamala, which is fascinating and interesting. But we're getting the feeling that they're going to play it really safe in 2024 and that we're going to have to rely on people like the Lincoln Project, former Republicans, to get freaking tough against Trump and pushing for more clarity and progressiveness. So, Callie, do you think that the 2020 election season, is it going to be more progressive for the Democrats or not?
It better get there and get there quickly. And I want to just speak back to Eddie's point about this whole counterintuitive placement of Kasich. You know, it's like, oh, we're so excited that this guy who is, you know, big Republican is speaking over here and saying bad things about them. You know, I mean, really, people, you're going to take up space doing that? It's insulting, really, to the people who've been there and who are there. So something better happen, and I'm not sure how that's going to be. Perhaps, to your point about members of the squad who are fairly safe going into the future, maybe their voices will be on the trail. We're going to hear from Michelle Obama. We're going to hear from some other people, but they're going to snap this up and pretty quickly. Because it's about, yes, we have Kamala. It's a little bit different than you expected. That's good. But you need to get some energy. That was the whole point of the nomination.
Enthusiasm and energy. Yeah,
exactly.
Eddie.
So look, I think it's very clear to me that the centrist component of the party continues to hold the reins of the party. Again, as I said earlier, that there's a general consensus that we all need to get Donald Trump out of office. And that provides cover, I think, for centrists to continue to push the kinds of policies that they've pushed for the last 20, 30 years. And so part of what we have to do is to remember that we got to walk and chew gum at the same time. We got to get Donald Trump out of office, and we got to continue to push this party and to continue to push an agenda for a radical reimagining of the country. And so what we do know is the glare of Trumpism can blind us to the ideological fissures in the party. Mm-hmm. We understand that. But it seems to me very clear when we look at the lineup, when we ask where are the young activists who have been in the streets, when we think about questions of Latina women, where are they in this thing? It seems as if it's business as usual. Mm-hmm. And we got to call that out for what it is. Mm-hmm. Understanding, and this is the lesson I've learned from 2016, understanding that we got to get Trump out of office. That's clear. But we can't let these folk use that reality as a way to bulldoze us with this centrist nonsense that'd be tinkering around the edges and not
That's
fundamentally transformed.
It's almost like y'all got too uppity. Y'all are taking to the streets. Y'all are demanding crazy things like defunding. And so we need to make sure that you, and I'm saying that in terms of Black Lives Matter and Latino and Latinas who are supporting the movement, and just kind of like, like hush up.
I have to say, I think it's a lot of fear because, to Eddie's point and to all of y'all's point, getting Trump out of office is so paramount.
Right.
And those of us who look long and see what the reality would be, should there be another 4 years of him, I don't want any boat to rock if it means somebody's not going to be all hands on deck to get this man out. Mm-hmm. And in the doing of that, a lot of the detail, a lot of the paying attention to how you build a coalition is getting lost.
We do want to at least talk about the other convention, which is going to happen next week. And because Maria Hinojosa is the greatest founder ever, she gives us all a week off for the summer. So we won't be around. Our office is going to be closed next week. It's like summer vacation, and I'm just going to be out in front under my tree and not working. Thank you, Maria. Thank you, Futuro.
Well, you're welcome. We do it for our mental health. You know, we got to support our journalists.
Exactly. We need it. But we do know that the RNC, there will be 4 nights of Trump time. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to share this quote from CNBC. The overall theme of the week will be honoring the great American story. Monday's tagline will be Land of Promise. Tuesday will be Land of Opportunity. Wednesday will showcase Land of Heroes. And the final day, August 27th, will be built around a Land of Greatness theme. Now, compare this to the DNC's theme of Uniting America. So obviously, both the parties are taking different approaches to the election. Mm-hmm. Eddie, what's the appeal in the RNC? Like, who are they appealing to now in the pandemic, in the time of Black Lives Matter, in the time of 2020? What is the appeal going to be coming out of that convention next week in your mind?
Well, first of all, they're going to double down on the lie. right? As people are trying to really reimagine the country, they're going to tell this story of American greatness, that we are the shining city on the hill, that we are the Redeemer Nation, mm-hmm. an example of democracy achieved. And then you have these socialists and these radicals, these anarchists who are trying to overthrow our America, understanding that our and us and we means, you know, working class folk, the silent majority, the forgotten American, the troubled American, however we want to describe them. That's what it's going to do. It's going to be, in some ways, at certain levels, a kind of white identity fest. That's what it's all about, you know, in this wow. moment. And we need to understand it for what it is. And at the same time, right, we need to understand what the Democrats have to do. We need to do more than just talk about unity. They have to put forward an idea of America that is in decided contrast, right, to this notion of this white festival that's going to happen for the Republican National Convention. I'm just worried that we are in a moment of moral reckoning and the nation is going to turn around and do the same old shit that it has always done in these moments. And we're seeing it. They're going to double down on an idea of whiteness. And then people are going to run afraid and play on our fears and ask us to settle for something.
Yep.
When in fact, we should be doing something much more comprehensive and radical in this moment. It just raises the hackles on my neck.
And we're going to talk about those hackles on Eddie's neck at the end of the show when we talk about his book and this notion of the lie and the notion of hope, right? Because, you know, we're watching this shining, bright, huge democracy on a hill is a bunch of BS. We are watching the U.S. Postal Service being taken down. We have been seeing that it's been struggling financially and that it needs support. And yet now under Trump, it's being whittled down. We saw all of those pictures of our blue mailboxes being picked up by trucks. And Trump saying that it's not that he wants to undermine this election. It is that he is actively doing it right now. And he's opposed funding for the United States Postal Service. And by the way, as we've said, mail-in voting does not affect either party in terms of their turnout. I mean, it's complicated, but it does not affect their turnout.
Yeah. And according to a report by NBC, 671 sorting machines are being taken offline under this new policy that was initiated by the Trump-appointed Postmaster General, his name, Louis DeJoy.
Yes.
According to postal workers, the machines started to be removed under this initiative in June. Wow. On Sunday, during CNN's State of the Union with Jake Tapper, Mark Meadows, who is White House Chief of Staff, I've lost count. You know, he's the new Chief of Staff. He flat out denied that sorting machines were removed.
Uh-huh.
Jake, you keep saying that. So get your producer. Jake, you keep saying that. Get your producer to share where exactly those sorting machines were taken offline. Let them whisper in your ear, because what I'm telling you is you're picking up on a narrative that's not based on facts. When you look at the way that we process mail, we closed down a number of centers back 5 years ago under the Obama administration, and some of those sorting machines come out.
I understand
the
that.
Normal process of taking them out are really about regearing, because we're seeing an increase in parcels, a decrease in mail volume. And what I'm saying is a sorting machine to handle 100 million ballots, it's like a gnat on an elephant's back. It's not going to matter with 8.6 billion pieces of mail going through the Postal Service every year.
This is not just a Democratic issue, though. You know this. You must be hearing from senators representing these large red rural states that depend on mail. We are hearing reports about veterans whose medications are coming in late, about individuals who rely on the mail to get their businesses out, so many people doing business by mail during the pandemic, people whose Social Security checks aren't coming in. These are complaints coming in to offices that are Democratic and Republican. Even removing the issue of voting, this is having a huge impact on the American people.
Okay.
Oh my God.
It's obvious that this would hurt both parties. I mean, mail in rural communities, indigenous communities, and communities of color. Callie, I mean, what's your take on all this? You know, are we seeing an election that is already being sabotaged? Is this voter suppression on its biggest level? And how does it impact communities of color?
Well, it impacts them hugely. I've been writing about this for the last months, and it's finally gotten to this escalation point because lots of people hadn't been paying attention to all the stuff that was happening before DeJoy got in there. The negotiations between the Trump administration and the USPS were to put pressure on all the folks because of that thing that hangs over them, that pension bill that was passed that they have to pay, which is huge. So they're just underfunded and they're just going to be always without a lot of the resources that they need. So President Trump and his folks had said some months ago, well, we'll play ball with you and give you some money that you need, but here's what we're going to have in exchange. One of them was a new postmaster general, and we see what's happening with that. So when people understand that the post office is the only mail service that goes to every single mailbox, no matter where it is, as most rural as it can be in any place else, then imagine all those communities, as you say, of folks of color and rural communities and poor communities that are relying on this service for many things, not just their ballot, but also their medicine and other critical information that they need to get through the mail. And this is horrific. This is horrific on so many levels. And we haven't even talked about what has been acknowledged and documented as the China and Russia intervention. That's over to the side. I didn't even mention how a lot of the machines are all messed up to begin with.
Yeah.
I mean, because there's no uniformity across the country anyway about how we run elections. And let me note that most poll workers are elderly and are not going in. They're trying to recruit some young people. So it's just a big old mess on every level. So if this mail-in ballot piece, which is so critical, is not a viable option for people who want to cast their ballot, it's horrific.
Eddie, I mean, voter suppression, like you've written about it.
Yeah.
Talk to me about how you were talking to yourself processing this thing with the USPS.
Well, look, I am a child of the USPS. My father worked 30 plus years at the post office.
We have two.
And remember, the post office is one of the most diverse spaces. I mean, they're hiring people of color at rates far beyond most other government agencies and definitely higher than the private sector in most instances. So, and you know, I was just talking to my dad yesterday and he said, you know, in his thick country accent, Mississippi accent, he said, if you drive up early in the morning and you look behind the post office, what you gonna see? You're going to see FedEx trucks. You're going to see UPS trucks dropping off packages because we're the only ones who deliver to rural spaces.
That's right. That's right.
Right. And so part of what I know is this. The demographic shift that was announced in 2008 that had evidenced itself in American politics sent everyone into a damn panic. And we are seeing its implications, not only in terms of immigration policy, but at the ballot box. And if people think that we can give these folks, right, the benefit of the doubt, that's all we need to do is listen to Mark Meadows lie through his teeth on CNN in the clip we just played.
Yeah.
That their intent is to cheat.
Yeah.
And if we don't understand that, then we're going to lose. And so I think it's very important for us to be clear about at least one thing, that November is not going to settle anything. That the election in November is going to generate whether Trump wins or whether he loses. Let me put it clearly. Whether he wins or whether he loses, buckle up. Because it's not going to settle anything.
So let's move on to our final segment, which we call La Última y Nos Vamos, the last one before you go or last call.
And we want to end our show by talking about the ongoing movement for racial justice that's happening across the country. I would say it never, ever stopped, but it's in a heightened moment right now. There are still daily Black Lives Matter protests. On Saturday, a protest to defund the police in my home city of Chicago. Again, another reason why this weekend was pretty fucked up. You know, people were getting hurt. I actually tweeted, I said, wait, I was a kid in Chicago in 1968. This looks like the same thing. Police with billy clubs coming after protesters. Police were injured as well. This is after a week of clashes in Chicago. My students, in fact, are calling me and they're like, we're exhausted. And, you know, as a result, there's this backlash coming from super right-wing white nationalists, because over the weekend we saw that there were clashes between white supremacist groups like the Proud Boys and anti-racist protesters that happened in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and also in Stone Mountain, Georgia, where there's a side of a mountain that is engraved with the heroes of the Confederacy, just saying. So, Eddie, this weekend, I read your book. It's called Begin Again, James Baldwin's America and Its Urgent Lessons for Our Own. And as you know, America, this country is my adopted country. Mm. And so reading you, reading James Baldwin, understanding, again, so much of his prescient writing. And I marked it all up, but I'm not going to go quoting it all right now.
I've seen photos on social.
Well, because there is, of course, a moment when what Eddie has been saying throughout, and Callie, we live this, and Julio, we are the ones who are trying to correct the narrative. Mm-hmm. It is, in fact, about being a writer of consequence. But, you know, what you write in your book is that the solution isn't a return to a kind of normalcy, like, for example, what Biden might be fighting for, but rather really an entire reimagining of the country, which is what you say Jimmy Baldwin was allowing us to do from his work.
Right. And before I ask you the question, there was one quote from the book, and you write, "What we are living through, even with our cell phone cameras, is not unlike what Baldwin and so many others dealt with as the Black freedom movement collapsed with the ascent of the Reagan Revolution. This latest betrayal by the country joins with the underlying trauma caused by all previous betrayals. That trauma carried over, and it shapes implicitly how we imagine and respond to our current days. This is the undertow of Black politics. Mm. Traumatic memories that cling to our choices like ghosts who can't find peace as white America refuses to change again. Like Baldwin, we have to bear witness to it all and tell the story of how we got here. And then, just maybe, we can muster the resolve and the will to push this damn rock up the hill again."
I want to thank you, Eddie. I want to thank you, Callie, because you are doing this work always of telling the story of how we got here. And Eddie, I smiled a lot reading your book. I cried a lot, too. So I want you to tell me, what does this new era of reckoning, of beginning again, what does it look like on a systemic level?
Well, you know, we're in this moment, like I said earlier, of a moral reckoning where the contradictions of the country are in full view. Where whatever it was, whether we describe it as Reaganism, a Thatcherism, a neoliberalism, it has been revealed as a bankrupt ideology. And Donald Trump is a caricature of it. And so you have folk who are barely keeping their nose above water. And even in the midst of a global pandemic that is killing us indiscriminately, some of us more than others, you still have the police killing us indiscriminately. You still have racism and white supremacy defining the distribution of advantage and disadvantage. And you have young people and people across demographics risking their lives in the midst of this global pandemic in order to call America to the carpet. But you see, we're in a moment in which the country has turned its back once again on the possibility of being otherwise. And now we see them doubling down on the lie again. Oh, they want to take our America. They don't believe in our America. They don't believe in us. They don't believe in our values. That's what we're hearing. It's the radical left, right, who's trying to take the country and do X, Y, and Z, when in fact what we're trying to do is to build a more just America. There's a book I just finished reading entitled Once I Was You.
Damn.
Hey, who wrote that book?
A Memoir of Love and Hate in a Torn America. That book was written by somebody I know.
Oh,
yeah, she's my co-host, right?
And it's a story, right, that reveals the lie at the heart of the place.
Damn, bro.
You see?
Thank you, bro.
And part of what we have to do is confront that lie honestly. You know, all of us can't be poets, but all of us got to bear witness.
Wow, you saw how he just did that, Julio?
Now that is true.
Suave.
That's true allyship, right? Write that down for cross-promoting books. Like, that's a move. That was a boss move. Callie, what about you? What is this beginning again, listening to Eddie's words and the work that you do consistently over, you know, you're one of my favorite journalists in the Boston area. What does it mean to you?
First of all, let me just say, reread Eddie's Democracy in Black in my book club, and they almost threw me out. They said, dang, we don't want to think about all this. Anyway, I just want to point that out.
It's like too much truth.
Yes, it was my suggestion, so they beat me up. Anyway, so I want to acknowledge that. You know, I'm the way we were ending is the way I started. I'm really struggling. I'm watching people out there in the streets and elsewhere working behind the scenes mm-hmm. who are putting their lives on the line again for so many of us. I'm watching people try to co-opt it in really horrific ways. And I'm watching, as Eddie said beautifully, the lie, the lie, the lie. Mm. And I want us, because for so long I've been thinking it's him or folks like him or his group, but it's really, we have to pay attention to this and understand, you know, what is our responsibility in unearthing the lie and pushing back against the lie, mm-hmm. no matter how hard it is. And it's hard, it's mm-hmm. real hard right now. But that is the task. And so I just keep trying to roll that stone up the hill, and it keeps rolling back, and I keep rolling it up, and I don't get to the top. But if we don't keep saying, and doing, then I don't know what's going to happen, because I am at this moment scared out of my mind. Mm. I really am.
You know, there's this moment in Baldwin, Callie, in his last novel, Just Above My Head. This is where I got the title from. He says, responsibility is not lost. Responsibility is abdicated. And if one refuses abdication, then one begins again. Mm. So we're the latest generation that has experienced America's betrayal.
Wow.
And the question is, what will we do in this moment? How will we respond in this moment? This is our time, mm-hmm. right here, right now, to risk everything. Yep. And we just need to understand that for what it is. Sometimes it's not the end that's in view. It's actually the process of rolling the damn rock up the hill that matters.
Yeah.
Hell yes.
Wow.
Hell yes. I mean, we are exhausted, but here we are. We come back and we begin again. Hmm. And that's the name of a beautiful book, Begin Again, James Baldwin's America and Its Urgent Lessons for Our Own, written by the one and only Dr. Eddie Glaude Jr., who's a distinguished professor at Princeton University. Thank you. And Callie Crossley, host of WGBH's Under the Radar. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining Julio and me on this episode of In the Thick. It was so powerful.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was great to be with you.
Indeed.
I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Uno, dos, tres.
Dear listener, wow.
Yeah.
What an amazing episode. It's a perfect time for an assignment to go do something. Go rate and review us, because it really does help us. Also, remember, you could listen to In the Thick on Pandora, Spotify, wherever you decide to get your podcasts today. Check us out on the web at inthethick.org. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook. And remember to tell your familia and your amigos and amigas to listen.
Amigos. Amistades.
Amistades. In the Thick is produced by Nicole Rothwell Noor Saudi and our New York Women's Foundation Ignite fellow, Harsha Nahata, with editorial support from Erica Dilday. Our audio engineers are Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Leah Shaw. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Thanks to Raul Perez for recording me. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Kept and ZZK Records. Wow. Have a good rest of your week. Ooh, take a deep breath. Hang on. We're not going anywhere. And we'll see you on our next episode, dear listener. Ciao.
Like, I love it. Nos vemos.
There was a squawking that came on Saturday night.
Hmm. Wow.
That was terrifying.
When you were in Connecticut?
I was in Connecticut, like deep, and I thought it was the chupacabras.
Okay, God. Stop.
But like...
okay.
It was like that.
Lord.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.